Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to the 100th episode of Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. I'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. And now on Art in the Air Spotlight, we have Chris Acton. She is from Acton Creative and a weaver, but she's going to be talking about something going on through October 5 through 11 called Spinning and Weaving Week, and that's what's going on, and there'll be 7 days of weaving fun planned. Chris, welcome to Art in the Air.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have
Aloha,
you.
Aloha, Chris.
So tell us a little bit, what is Spinning and Weaving Week?
Absolutely. There is a organization called the Hand Weavers Guild of America, and they started a week-long celebration of spinning and weaving and dyeing. I'm not sure how many years ago, but it's always the first full week of October. So this year it's October 5th through the 11th. And typically they've got all kinds of festivities planned. And I decided that for Acton Creative, I would sponsor a challenge that week. I think weaving can seem like this big complicated thing. So I want to bring it out to the public and make it simple and fun. So I'm doing a weave anything challenge. And the rules are you cannot use a loom. You can use any materials around your house. So you can weave blades of grass or spaghetti or pool noodles or whatever you have. But the challenge is to produce something woven from things around your house. And I'll release all of the official kind of rules and guidelines first thing Monday morning on October 5th. And all the entries are due by noon on Thursday the 8th. And then on Friday, I will produce a carousel of all the submissions. They'll be on the website, Acting Creative, as well as on all the social media. And then I'm going to randomly draw some winners.
Oh, that sounds great. So I have a loom question, like warping your loom. Uh-huh. So how, you know, do you warp it per project or do you have a massive warping where you can keep producing on that same warp?
Mm-hmm. You know what? It kind of depends. In a lot of cases, I will do a big bolt of fabric. And so I'll put on, you know, 5, 7, 10 yards of fabric and I just weave. And then the plan is you just cut it like you would other fabric and sew from there. But there are times if I want to do something like a table runner, I will put on just enough for one table runner because I want the ends to be finished a certain way. And I want the width to be specific. That's really what it comes down to is the width of the project. So either one, that's a good question. It depends on the project.
And tell us a little bit about Acting Creative. You recently left Chesterton Arts Center. We're sad about that, being part of that. But to go out full time, and you're doing like, is it bi-weekly videos and everything? But tell us a little about what you do with Acting Creative.
Sure. Acting Creative is, you can find it at actingcreative.net online. I have a series of weaving classes in the works. It'll all be digital. Every week on Thursday morning, you can find me on Facebook Live through Acting Creative, and I'll be doing some weaving demonstrations and answering questions from the community and friends and whoever wants to jump in. And then every Wednesday, I put out a weekly video called A Handwoven Experience. And they're just short little videos all about the weaving world. So each week then with Acting Creative, I do a Live at the Loom on Thursday mornings at 9:30 through Facebook Live, where I do weaving demonstrations and answer any kind of questions from the community or friends or whoever wants to jump in. And then on Wednesdays, I release a weekly video called A Handwoven Experience, which is just a short little video about some aspect of weaving. My love of weaving, I just want to share it to everyone. So it's meant for anyone can jump in and learn a little something about weaving.
You now out on your own, do you all go out and do physical demonstrations? I know I've seen you at the Chesterton Art Fair and also at the European Market. So are you doing any more of those types of things?
I'm not currently doing any kind of in-person demonstrations. Nope, it's all digital these days.
So Chris, do you feel that your time with the Indiana Arts Commission program was instrumental in you making this transition to being a full?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, my time with the on-ramp community was amazing and really helped change my kind of mindset about where I could go with my art and my business, for sure.
So once again, we're about ready to wrap up here, but tell us a little bit where we can find out about you online and on Facebook and see what you're doing.
Absolutely. Yes, you can certainly check out everything. The home base is all at actingcreative.net, but you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram under the same name. And then also on YouTube, where the weekly videos, A Handwoven Experience, is every Wednesday. Everyone's also welcome to sign up for the email community. I send out a little love note to all my fans and followers on Wednesday mornings, and it includes tips and tricks, some information about what I have going on, and just little updates from Acting Creative.
Very good. Well, talking about Spinning and Weaving Week, October 5th through 11th, that's Chris Acton from Acton Creative, a master weaver for us. We thank you for being on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, John Kane, longtime executive director of South Shore Arts, at one time Northern Indiana Arts Association. And he's going to bring us up to date on some of his own personal journey, how he got from where he was to where he is. And also Micah Borstein, he's here and he's the now deputy director. Last time he was on Art on the Air, he was our education coordinator there. So welcome to Art on the Air, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Okay, well, John... Our audience would probably be interested in your whole history, like, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school, where you went to college and everything, and you know, probably your time in Crown Point running the antique shop, and I don't want to give away too much, so tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm a Gary boy, and then we moved to Crown Point. I got interested when I was in high school, I got interested in theater, and got a totally useless degree in theater from Otterbein College in Ohio. And but you know, it's something that I've used in my adult life, I guess. I think that it's I really loved it at the time. But I was also brought up with a relative in my life, my mother's uncle, one of her uncles, who was a big antiques and art collector. He lived outside of Cleveland. And so I was brought up with this tradition of collecting and admiring things and lots of things. He had a lot of things. And I admire things as well. So I really was more interested, I found, in art than acting. And so I opened this little antique shop in the old courthouse in Crown Point shortly after I graduated from college. And it kind of became an art gallery as well, because I came into contact with people who were involved with artists who had attended the Art Institute of Chicago back in the teens, in the 19 teens, and who had eventually found their way out to the dunes in the 1920s and 30s. Hanel, Vin and Hazel Hanel were chief among, and I knew Hazel quite well. Vin had already passed away by the time I met Hazel. But Dick Brower from the Museum of Fame at Belfrage University and Hazel were hanging an exhibit of Vin and her work in a second story space on Lincoln Way in downtown Belfo. And I bought a couple or several pieces from that. And then I started selling a lot of the work that Hazel still had of Vin's that had never been collected. It was up in her loft in the house that they built in Furnaceville back in, I suppose it was in the 20s or so. They had done work for decorators and so forth in Chicago. They lived on North State Parkway, which is a fancy address, during the 20s. But then they, once the Depression came, that business dried up. And they moved permanently out to the dunes. So I had the antique shop started out as such, but it became a gallery as well. And I really loved that regionalist stuff. And I had inherited some stuff from my great uncle when he passed away. And that was my primary interest. I had this shop, and then I became the director of the Chamber of Commerce in Crown Point for 4 years in 1989. And we redecorated downtown Crown Point. We got rid of some of the ugly things, like there was an aluminum awning that ran along the east side of the square and was supposed to, I suppose, provide, you know, covering for pedestrians, but it was just ungodly looking. And so we started the whole Main Street thing in Crown Point at that time. And it's, you know, and it really took hold, and they've really run with that. And in 1993, I went to go work for then Northern Indiana Arts Association at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts. That was how I actually got to be paid as an arts person.
Well, I have to say, John, I was working there at the same time. I came on board at 92 for the theater and building. And one of the things, mm-hmm. you may be too modest to say, the NIAA was in serious financial trouble. And there was serious talk and discussion within the building of whether it was going to survive. And I remember the catering department was talking about, oh, gee, this gallery space would make a great banquet room. So I know you may not be too modest to say so, but you came in and really rescued that organization from the depths of despair.
You know, I had no qualifications whatsoever. I just flew by the seat of my pants, and I had just enough lack of awareness of what was really needed to bring what I could to bear on the situation. The one thing I had, I guess I've always had, is an ability to talk to people and apparently charm them out of money, because
yay, theater background.
A long time. Okay. And for a long time, I've been telling people, you know, I only know people who give me money, because for the last 20, I don't know, 7 or so years, I've been working for what's now South Shore Arts. And the people that I've been socializing with during that whole period of time are almost all people who give me money. not for myself, unfortunately, but for these organizations that I've worked for. And, you know, working for the Chamber of Commerce gave me some background in nonprofit management, which was useful. I was really interested in playing a role in the community. I had been inspired by people in Crown Point I met along the way when I had my business and then when I was with the Chamber, who, you know, were true community leaders. And I admired their wanting to make an impact and make a difference. So having come from Gary, I felt that it was very important. I saw how my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation kind of just walked away from Gary. And I know they had their, you know, what they thought was justification for doing so. But I've always despaired that that happened and that city was just, it was just abandoned, frankly. And I'm sure there are people who would, you know, disagree with my point of view on it, but, it mattered to me that, you know, Crown Point, isn't Paris, but it's a nice town, and I wanted it to be nice when I was there. And then I was happy to be able to take a regional role working for Northern Indiana Arts Association was a fairly small organization, although it had been around since 1936, a visual arts organization. But we had this opportunity shortly after I arrived to become the regional partner of the Indiana Arts Commission for Lake Quarter and LaPorte counties. And that really put us on firm footing as the regional leader for the arts. And I relished that opportunity.
And so what did that entail?
Primarily the most important responsibility we have is that we disseminate the grants that the Indiana Arts Commission allocates, the grant money that they would allocate on an annual basis to our three counties. And the relationship was established in 1997, and they gave us a couple of years to get ready for it, to build our capacity so that we as an organization could take on these responsibilities. We were also asked to provide information and referral. In other words, for one thing, we had, of course, this was just at the beginning of websites and so forth, but we were asked to maintain a regional arts calendar on our website, which we do. And to provide other forms of promotion for, and as one of the Indiana Arts Commission staff people said to me when we sat down for dinner one night in those years, you're terribly competitive and you're going to have to stop doing that because you have to be you have to function for all artists and all arts organizations in the region and not just your own, which is a hard thing, you know, bitter pill to swallow when you have to raise money to keep going and you are competing. You know, most, I think the most obvious competitor we had was the symphony because we shared a lot of the same, supporters. I mean, completely different product we were pitching, but, we were definitely competing with them for donors and money and audiences.
So how are you interfacing with the Indiana Arts Commission now during the pandemic?
Well, this year is a little different that for the first time in 20 years, the money is not being funneled through us. They're still paying us to be the administrator, for the grant program. So in other words, the grants are submitted, this all done, you know, online nowadays, and it's very efficient. And, but we solicit, panelists to review the grants every year in the spring. And so they're reviewed on the local level. So the concept being that local people should be able to decide who gets money, and what's worthy of funding. And, we did do that part, but this year the IAC is going to pay all of its grantees, directly, themselves because they're concerned about the viability of the arts organizations that apply and the non-arts organizations that apply for funding for arts projects. So, and indeed we have, I think, four maybe project grantees who aren't going to take their grant after all because they won't be able to. And we have two arts organizations so far that are not going to be funded because they're not going to be able to execute their performing arts groups, theater at the center, and Lakeshore concerts.
So has,
they're both performing arts groups.
So has South Shore Arts, have they, I know they've canceled through 2020. Are you going through 2021 yet?
South Shore Arts has not canceled anything. South Shore Arts is continuing with exhibits. We were able to extend our Marie Sendak exhibit, which was had just gone up before the pandemic set in, and we were to have that up through the end of April, and it's been extended it was extended through mid-September, and then now we have a Barbara Meeker exhibit, a retrospective going up. So when we have classes, Mike, you can talk about that. We have both online and in-person classes.
Oh, in-person too.
Yeah. With lots of social distancing and other measures in place. Symphony, however, is on hiatus right now. Mm. And we're hoping that after the first of the year, the conditions will be such that we'll be able to schedule possibly three concerts. That's what we budgeted for. We've also budgeted for a couple of chamber concerts. But all of that, everybody on the artistic side of the symphony is currently on furlough. So, we're looking at December 1st as a date to sit back down with our music director, Kirk Muspratt, and our musicians to determine, you know, what's the right course going forward.
You know, John, one thing I'd like to talk about is how the symphony came into being under your thing. They were going through some financial things, quite a few years ago, and South Shore Arts kind of stepped in and kind of, I'll say, absorbed it, or however you want to describe that. Describe that process.
Well, approached personally on many occasions by Chris Morrow, whose family owned Mercantile Bank. They had sold it to Harris Bank recently. Back then, this was in the mid-aughts. And Chris would say, you know, you should just take over the management of the symphony. He was the president of the symphony board. He had done a big bailout of the symphony, raising a lot of money for them in 2005. But by 2007, they were already out of that money. And he had shaken up the board, and he'd done this and that. And so in 2008, they were back in the same position of running out of money, and some of their major donors, you know, corporate donors, historically were getting tired of, you know, it's an expensive model, the symphony orchestra. It's heavy on personnel. And, you know, there's like 70 musicians in the orchestra, 70-something in that range for a classical concert. So he approached South Shore Arts with the idea that his family would put up some money and he would go about getting that money matched. It ended up being a considerable amount of money, which some of which we had to use right up front to pay off symphony debt, and we were located in the same building in Munster, Center for Visual and Performing Arts. So, you know, basically we had to streamline our offices. We had to streamline our staff. We had to you know, combine marketing efforts, et cetera, et cetera. It was quite a lot of work that commenced officially as of July 1st, 2008. And, of course, we got all this money, and then no sooner did we get it, but then the markets collapsed that fall. And you know, we couldn't use any of that money, or very little of it anyway. We had to be very careful. And it wasn't for another couple of years that that money bounced back to the level it was when it was given to us. And so there were a lot of things that, had we known, I think, what lay ahead, I don't know what the right grammar is for that, we might not have done it at all, because it was, you know, on many levels, it sounded like a really super good idea because you have these economies of scale. But on the other hand, you're expecting one staff to run two organizations and raise money for two organizations, one of which you have no knowledge of how to run, because, you know, it's a performing arts organization. We were fortunate in having the opportunity to work with a performing arts marketing expert, from the North Shore. And we did that prior to taking on responsibility. So we had, you know, sort of a roadmap. But then, you know, things like, oh, the Star Plaza Theater closed. And, oh, you know, this global pandemic. So these are not things for which one is prepared. And miraculously, we have survived 12 years under this management structure. But I think it's very much at the expense of South Shore Arts. And the symphony is it's a very demanding animal. And I think it needs its own staff. I'm at the point now, 12 years later, where, you know, I give us a pat on the back for having kept it going all these years. And we haven't blown through all the money. We never did blow through all the money. We did recently have both South Shore Arts and Symphony were among the nonprofits in Northwest Indiana that to receive very generous bequests from the Marjorie Mills estate. So we have some money in reserve, but you know, to budget for this fiscal year was extremely painful, and of course you don't know what's coming, and so we budget for the Symphony. We budgeted 60% of what we usually receive in contributed income for the year. And we budgeted ticket sales at only 50%, not of what we usually get, but of just the three concerts and then the two chamber concerts. So it was an extremely, we tried to be very cautious in budgeting, and we have to, you know, had to budget a significant draw from those funds that are in reserve in order to keep the organization going.
John, one thing you announced recently is something that probably a lot of our audience doesn't know, unless they're members of South Shore Arts or read the newspaper or something like that. But your tenure is coming to an end, and you're going to hand off some of your responsibilities in the interim to your deputy director. So why don't you speak to that just a little bit?
Well, I started meeting with the board, South Shore Arts board, last fall. On the subject of preparing for my retirement. I agreed that I would continue to work for the organization for 18 months, and that beginning January 1st of this year and then concluding on June 30th of 2021. That would be at the end of the fiscal year that we are in now. And we had hired Micah Borenstein as our education director 2.5 years ago, and I was very impressed with his mental acuity and his way of with the ladies in terms of our art and focus group that meets on every other has been not lately but every other Monday morning for years. We've had these free art appreciation programs in Munster. And Micah's job as director of education included running those sessions, and he was just great with them. It's not all ladies, by the way. There are a few men who show up. And
I mean, he puts on angel wings. So
yeah. He put on angel wings for me. Yes, yes. So you know, he has really great perception, I think, and has good ideas, and I'm excited to see where Micah has not been named executive director. Well, he won't be named executive director until they can, you know, pull it out of my cold dead hands. But the title, no, that's not true. He will. He is in line to be executive director when I'm done as of the end of next June. But that's still to be determined officially by the board. Yet in December of this year. Currently, Micah is deputy director. Yes, I have handed off things to him. I give him just as much as he'll take. and that's been great. We have a good working relationship. And then I've also agreed to remain involved on some level as needed. I would imagine that will be on a fundraising level.
Meaning likely. Micah has you on speed dial, right?
Yes. And Yes, just as I currently have him on speed dial.
Hey, John, does that include your one-man show? Are you going to continue to do that as a fundraising event for South Shore?
Well, not this year because of
uncertainty
of, we're going to do a rerun and a virtual rerun this year. But yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, Micah might not want me around that much, but I have, right now, the promise I've made to the board is that I will remain involved, and if they give me a fancy enough title, you know, that suits my ego, and you know,
it's
really...
Lots of sparkle. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I just have a question for Micah, and it might be too soon to answer it, but what inroads or collaborations or new ideas are you desiring to accomplish? Do you have your like sort of list of things that you would like to do?
Well, it would be disingenuous of me to tell you otherwise. I of course have my dreams and machinations that I keep inside my head and go over in those late hours before I fall asleep. But to be honest, it's the last 6 months especially has been me working alongside John, really getting to know the board and to find out those areas where we can improve the organization, right? So many of the things we look at right now are of the moment, to be perfectly honest with you. We are taking a hard look as a staff and as a board about the way we engage our constituents across our three county region, and to find out some of those you know, perhaps shortcomings in the way that we reached out to certain populations, specifically marginalized populations and marginalized voices. That's a cause that's really near and dear to me, but I need to work with the board, and the board has been very receptive to that. So I think as this year progresses towards that June 30th date, that's something that we'll be acting on a bit more. The other thing I really enjoy about working alongside John specifically is not only is it good fun. John and I have a great time together, and I think that, you know, all kidding aside, which is difficult for him and I to do, John will be very much a part of the organization. The only reason that I think able to even think about making these meaningful contributions to our region in the realm of the arts is because John, for the last 27 years, built this organization to have the kind of stature where if we throw our weight behind something, it means something. And I think that's important. But back to my point is I really enjoy walking around the center with John and pointing to things and saying, do you want your name on that when you retire? Should we make that your memorial wall, your memorial kiln, your memorial bathroom? It's a lot of fun to do that with John.
John, do you want your own bust in there? You know, like we have. John, yeah. we have about a minute left. So what are you looking forward to in retirement of doing? I mean, now that you're not going to have the day-to-day operational responsibility, when that comes in June. After June.
Yeah, and I'm gonna add to that, John. So do you have a personal art practice? Is that going to, I mean, other than theater, you mentioned theater, but were you involved with any other kind of visual or 3D arts?
I would say that my personal practice is the collecting art. Yeah, and of course I've done these readings once a year. And, you know, may continue to do that in the future. But what was the question? Oh, about being retired. Well, you know, it's not going to be any different than the last 6 months, except I won't have, because I think I'll still have grant deadlines for Micah. And I'll still have, but I won't have to run meetings anymore. I won't have to be the one, you know, working out the agenda for the meetings and getting people involved and all of that. I won't have to be in charge anymore. And I'm looking forward to that.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for being on Art in the Air, sharing your history with that. And Micah, we thank you for being on. That's John Kane. He's the executive director for South Shore Arts. And, of course, Micah Borstein, he's the deputy director. And thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And next on Art in the Air, we have a doctor who's turned artist, Dr. Kun Hong, from Korea originally, and now is doing art, but still practicing medicine. And so he's doing both things creatively on both sides. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, I think our audience would love to hear about how you got from where you were to where you are now, both in your travels as a physician, and then how arts became part of that.
I've been practicing at the Little Compton and Mary Hospital in Evergreen Park, which is attached to the south side of Chicago, for 34 years. And I retired from my visit practice in 2013 and went to Africa to help the people in a small mission hospital as a volunteer radiologist for 5 years. So from 2013 to 2018, I worked in Africa. And then came home as a second retirement. And now I'm settling back in Chicago. And one thing what happened was, while I was practicing, I was living in a relatively comfortable house in the suburb. But we sold that house while we were working overseas and moved into the one-bedroom condominium in downtown.
That's a big change.
Okay. So I was looking for a studio near my home, but it was impossible until I got a notice from Kai Konstantinov, and she told me that she found a space for me at Indiana C Studios. And I thought, wow, that is a little bit too far from me. But then I found out that there's a South Shore Lines connecting from Millennium Park in downtown Chicago to 11th Street of Michigan City. And I tried that. It took me an hour and a half. But when I arrived to the studio, I found out it was a very spacious and a very quiet neighborhood. And I really liked it. And so I signed the lease immediately. And I brought all of my painting tools so I can spread all over in a previous classroom instead of my small kitchen area that I was working. And then as soon as I settled down, I became friends with many artists in the area, and they invited me to join the Dunham Center of Painters and also Area Artists Association. And they're almost like a lockdown in Chicago area. But in Indiana, that we still have many activities like an exhibition, group exhibition, and the soul exhibitions that are happening in Michigan City and around. So I was very fortunate to get associated with those people, invited me to be a part of their exhibition. So I'm very happy with it now.
And those art studios are at St. Mary's, which they're repurposing for an audience that doesn't know, in Michigan City, a school. And I think you have a double-sized studio, like a double-sized classroom, if I saw a picture of it.
Well,
it's quite large.
Well, it is a regular classroom, but my neighboring artists are sharing that room with the two artists, but I have all by myself, so it looks like a double size. I really enjoy every inch of the room.
So you were born in Korea. Is your family artistic, or were they mostly in the medical field?
Well, actually, I came from the middle-income family. My father was a small business running, and my mother is a school teacher for her life, and nobody was in medicine. Nobody was in art. And so I was kind of the...
A renegade.
A New York renegade in my family. And when I was a small child, we had a Korean conflict. So North Korea invaded South Korea. We ran away for life and left everything behind. And while we were surviving in the southern part of Korea, we had no house, no food, no clothing, and no toys. At that time, my mother brought some papers used on one side, so the other side is empty and clean. And she gave me a pencil, so I started to doodle. And that was where I began my interest in arts. And my parents were supporting me to continue pursue the art as a hobby until when I was about graduating high school. I told my father that I'm interested to go to art school. He said no. Surviving country after the war, there's no way the artist can make a living. So I had to choose another career, and I chose medicine as a second choice.
So what were those? What were those first sketches? Were they nature based? Were they stuff inside your home?
Everything. I was enjoying my painting in the figures, landscapes, and all kind of activities. So there was no limit. But you have to understand that I never took any training in arts particularly. So in a way, I was a self-taught artist. So I do not have any fundamental training in the background. So I found out, if I look at my earlier painting, there were so many mistakes that I kind of regret. But that was a kind of the learning curve, I guess.
So did you, as you traveled around, like when you were in Ethiopia, did you bring your paints with you? Because I noticed, or did you paint those Ethiopian scenes after you were not in Ethiopia anymore?
Actually, while I was practicing, I was so busy and I did not have any time to spend paintings as a hobby. But I was introduced to medical mission, short-term missions. And when I went out into the field, I found out there's such a variety of the beautiful scenery and the people, different clothing and so forth. So I start to bring small sketch pad and then pen drawing and a little bit of watercolor add-on. And that was kind of the rebirth of my interest in arts. And I decided to retire completely from my busy practice, went to Ethiopia as a full-time medical missionary. And still I was busy there in the hospital, but over the weekend, I was able to indulge myself in painting. Yes, I did bring my painting tools, and I stood through the painting in oil. I was immediately recognized by the area artist and the gallery. So I had an opportunity to have my solo art exhibit in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, the capital city, and then France. Paris and friends. And
how did that happen? How did Paris happen?
Well, I did not sell any paintings.
Well, that doesn't, that would have been a bonus, but. It
was a really unique privilege and opportunity to be there. And then I brought the paintings to South Korea and I had exhibition in my mother country. And there I was able to sell few paintings. So, and then I had an exhibition in Chicago area, Korean cultural centers. And I'm looking forward to have an exhibit in Michigan City and also in other parts of the Indiana as well.
You know, as a how has the COVID-19 situation affected you in terms of, you know, what you're able to go out and paint or do, and also just sheltering in place and everything like that? And since we do have a physician, you know, your advice to people on it too, so.
After I came home in 2018, that was before COVID virus, and many mission hospitals found out that I got out of Ethiopia. They will keep calling and come to help us and so forth. So I told them that I only can come like 2 or 3 months at a time instead of the full-time 12 months a year. So I was planning to go to another small rural hospital in Ethiopia and also in Egypt and Cameroon. So all the plans were laid out, but everything was completely stopped due to the COVID virus. I cannot travel. Unless if I visit Ethiopia, I should be quarantined in the hotel for 2 weeks before I was able to see a single patient and so forth. But because of this internet that I'm able to read the CT scans from Cameroon and Ethiopia. So I can provide the readings to help the physicians overseas. And it takes about 24 hours turnaround time. So they can take the CT scans. I can read it at home. So that I can help the people abroad. But at the same time, in the Chicago area, there is a clinic that providing the service to the needy. And they do take the x-rays. And I don't have to drive to the area. I can read x-rays at home by using computer. So I can provide my medical expertise to the people still after
that. That is so beautiful. Wonderful.
Thank you.
So I also noticed that you were on the cover of several medical magazines as well, your art.
While I was a medical, Chicago Medical Society member, they realized that I was painting and they asked me, would you do a cover art? And say, wow, they would be honored. So about five paintings were featured in Chicago Medical Society journal. And then some other, including like a Swedish surgical journal, they approached me by internet. We could not afford to pay you, but can I use your painting? I said, sure, no problem. So they featured on the Swedish surgical journal also.
I really like your paintings.
Thank you for coming.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
I like some of the themes in them too. Like there's some where you're showing a person out of an ambulance, and another one they're treating them in a room, and then you have other people that looks like a scene may probably, I'm going to guess, in Ethiopia. And then, of course, there's the Picasso from downtown Chicago, Daley Plaza. And you even have a self-portrait there that's really something.
Thank you.
How would you describe your own artistic style? I mean, these are pretty close to realistic, but how would you describe it?
I do not like the abstract painting yet. And I'm exploring some of the opportunity using the different style. But as of today, I am using the classical rendering of the realism.
So how did you find the palette and chisel? How long have you been associated with them?
Actually, just over a year. I found out by attending one of the exhibition at that place, and then found out they were offering open studio. After becoming a member, you could come every day. So since I have a lot of time, free time, I go there and then paint from morning until the afternoon. So it was very nice that I can paint all day with a sack lunch and then until the COVID virus locked down. So we only can do through the Zoom session. So we can paint at home by looking at the internet, and because of the small computer monitor, it is not as same as a live model painting.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Dale Popovich through there?
He does. Oh, yes,
he's an amazing watercolor artist.
Yeah, he is an outstanding artist and a good teacher. I did not have any class from him, but he is a very good one.
I know. I would love to have a class with him. That would be so amazing.
Yeah.
You taken classes from anyone?
Yes, I took several classes, including like Clayton Beck and a few other artists there. Lenin Zelso, he's a very good artist. And I took other out-of-town painters as well. And I enjoyed it. But whenever I took a classes, I feel like, well, maybe someday I could reach that level, but it may take some time, I guess.
Sometimes the community is nice. So when you were in Ethiopia and you were out sketching, did you, other people come and join you or ask what, I mean, sometimes like when I go out with my sketchbook, there's a crowd that gathers and either they start sketching or they're
when we
curious.
Were for the mobile clinic, and hundreds of the people are lining up. So there's no resting unless you have a lunch break or coffee time or something. So I forced myself to go out with a sketch pad, draw some people so I can take a few minutes of break in the middle of the busy schedule. And I found out the arts and the music are international languages.
Yes, they are.
You don't need their own dialogue to communicate. The people will be very skeptical about what I was doing when I first opened the sketch pad. But once I start to doodling it, the people will see what I was doing. The people will be coming forward and draw me. And then I was able to draw a lot of people in action and the scenery. So I only carried a small sketch pad instead of the entire oil painting to the field. And then you took some small digital camera photographs to make a memory of those colors. And then I was able to do the real painting at the guest house. So I converted my guest house into a studio. So that was very unique among the doctors living together in that compound. So that area was my own workplace that I was able to do it, many paintings there.
But you're right. Music and art is a universal love language.
Mm-hmm.
So. Now, you're going to participate in these plein air painters. It's a call out in Michigan City by the Dunes Arts Foundation at Angela House. And it's a former convent and everything. We had a spotlight segment that we did with that. But you're going to be involved in that. So tell us how you got connected with that and what exactly you're going to do.
Well, I was invited to be a part of the Dune and Plein Air painters, so I already became friends of some of the painters there. And during that, I will be painting in the morning, and then if I have energy left after the lunch, I may continue. But if I don't, I may take some rest in the afternoon, and I don't have to drive back to Chicago. I can rest at the Angela's house, and then get along with the people who are staying there overnight. And then the next morning, I can go out and paint again with a fresh mind.
So what is your intention? Is it your intention to paint with oils or with watercolor while you're doing that?
Primarily oil.
Is that your preferred? Is that your preferred paint?
Yeah. I'm learning pastel and the watercolor, but I don't feel comfortable as of yet.
What are your favorite kind of subjects to paint? Yeah, you obviously plein air is outdoors, but have you ever thought about doing indoor portraiture or anything now that you have a studio here out in Michigan City?
Well, I don't like just the plain landscaping. I would like to see some people walking around in front of the building and the trees and the water. That combination will give me some story in a small painting. So I would love to go out to the harbor and there's some old historic buildings, and I would like to meet the people walking around, and so we'll see. It's going to be exciting.
What's on your easel now? What are you doing now? What are you painting right now? Anything?
Right now, I'm working for the final touch-up of my painting, series of the paintings of the COVID virus, and I've been painting a number of the sisters who died from the COVID virus in the convent near Detroit, Michigan. So I got some photographs from the internet. So I'm painting each individual nuns who died of COVID virus. So that is going to be very touching very emotional. But I like to leave as a memory of those people, although I don't know them, but it's kind of the history in our country that like 13 or 12 nuns died from one convent in Detroit area. And I'm also featuring not all heroes were wearing the capes. So all those doctors and nurses working in a hospital wearing the mask, and some of them just took off the mask, wearing the scrubs and things like that. So I'm doing some series of the paintings of those will be featured in my exhibition at Lubesnik.
What size are they?
30 by 40.
Oh, large.
It divided by like 8 small sections of each individual doctors and nurses. So it is kind of ambitious project, but I like it. I enjoy it.
Do you have a website where people can view your artwork?
I do not have any website. Someday maybe I will develop it.
Yeah, but if they just Google your name, your artwork comes up. So
okay.
So any final thoughts about what's in your future for art? Have you ever thought about moving out to Northwest Indiana and abandoning that Lakeshore Drive condo and coming out and living closer here?
Well, I wish I could have a dual residence, but until then, I may have to settle down with commuting from downtown using the South Shore Line. And Angela House will be certainly helpful for me if I am tired, and maybe I can stay overnight and continue to painting. But until then, I may stay in the Chicago and loving to go to the opera and orchestra.
Yeah.
So that part I may not be able to enjoy at Michigan City.
Of course, you know, we do have not so much opera, but we do have an orchestra out here.
I know that. Yes.
We have quite a few cultural things. Well, we really appreciate
it. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for continuing to do that X-ray work across the world. It's really important.
Thank you very much.
Well, we appreciate you being on Art in the Air. That's Dr. Kun Hong, who's also an artist and going to be participating in the exhibit or the plein air painters that'll be going on at the two-night pricing at Angela House. We'd like to thank you for being on our show, Art in the Air.
Thank you
for inviting. Appreciate it.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.